Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
some interesting categories of elements in the periodic table. Now, I've done a lot of podcasts on the periodic table, and people, I'm sort of doing this just so I can some element groups in the periodic table. This is a podcast. I'm doing it while having a rehab walk to go through, and this is just something. I've just walked past this school sign. It's been repainted. This wall has been repainted in a sort of a dark colour. It's the local school opposite us. Okay, and I'm obviously walking, and so you'll hear hopefully me speaking, but occasionally I'll encounter unusual things and describe them. Now, what's happened is that I've sort of gone along and in various places sort of, I suppose, used the elements at various points and times in papers and stuff like that. I've gone to research things and looked at the internet and I realised, oh look, these people don't know all that much going around it. And you look up elements named by colour, and they probably get a few of them to get up. And so I want to cover a few groups of elements, like the elements named by colour. And it's sort of interesting. So what we have the halogen elements, and that has a few colour and a smell element in it. And a property. So this is sort of uses sort of like a descriptive thing. Having seen it, it's described. And I suppose there's a few things. So fluorine is no colour. It means fluorine is an element found in many fluxes, which reduces the melting temperature of things. And so fluorine rocks, fluorinated rocks were thrown in with metal to reduce the melting point of various things. Now, in the ideal flux, melts, then evaporates and moves out. So it goes in, melts, and gets you where you want to go, and moves out. So that's with solar flux. So fluorine's for flux and flow. Not our colour, obviously. I think that's perhaps one of the only use elements there. Then you have chlorine, which means green. The gas is green. And so this is only recent, I think, few hundred years since electrolysis got chlorine gas off separately. Then through the refinement of seaweed, so chlorine is green. Iodine, no, so it goes bromine iodine. So iodine's sort of a fairly heavy gas. So there's acetone is the next one up there. So you get iodine, xenon, and you get these heavy metals. So iodine, sort of, if you can imagine, barium, sort of, well, not up fully with lead. There's a few more elements to go up to lead, but it's quite up there, heavy. The one that lead is acetone. Who knows? I think that's radioactive. That's after plutonium. bismuth, plutonium, and acetone. So, but iodine is for purple or indigo. So there's two elements. That's chlorine and iodine. But then you have these other elements, which I mentioned that a few people know about. Oh, here, this is just horrible. There's a piece of footpath, and they've just got a. If you didn't know what you're doing, you just walk. Walk over it. Now, I was doing a fair amount of work on my way up here. Let's get it onto it. It was rubidium, which was discovered by Bunsen in his Bunsen burner. It chucked some results on it, made a blood dark red flame. So, and rubidium means Latin for dark red. So, that's a bit of a gosh, and there's a few, about four flame-coloured elements, and the name is the name of the element, it's the name of the colour. So that's going to get us a few more. There's cesium, which is so you've got lithium, sodium, potassium, rubidium, cesium, and francium. Now, cesium has got a sky blue flame, so it's sort of a whitish light blue flame. And cesium is the Latin for light blue. So we've got green, violet, dark red, light blue, and then you have indium. And indium is another shade of violet or indigo. So iodine is indigo and violet. Now indium is actually indigo, and indium is a colour. It's actually named after a place of India. It was colour associated with India, so it's sort of like does two things. It names India, and it also gives a colour. So if you put that in, you get an indigo coloured flame. And then there's thallium. This is, so you're going up the periodic table. You've got boron, aluminium, and you can put aluminium powder in the flame. It's a sort of a whitish thing. Then there's gallium, indium, and thallium. So thallium is just before lead, and that was a look it up. It's a rat poison, but thallium is the Latin word for shoot green, or the green of not the sort of yellowy green of a fresh shoot. So you've got six elements all in all, which are just by the colour, but there's more. There's in the middle, there's rhodium. This is for the colour of this salt, which is interesting. So rhodium is because it's got a rose coloured salt. So the gas, the colour of the flame, and the colour of the salt. There might be another one in there, so that's got up to seven elements, and it's sort of a way to get through. Now, thallium is interesting in that it was a rat poison, and there was a series of thallium murders by the poison of choice by poisoners in Sydney when there was a rat plague. So Sydney was a pretty rough place before World War One, in that lead up to it. It's sort of pretty amazing place to be at. So that's those elements there. Now, as I'm walking along, there's obviously that's a group of silver elements. There's a similar number of elements named associated with astrological bodies. And those astrological, and I've got to work out what cadmium means. I'll go back and think. But you've got helium associated with the element of the sun, because the first helium was, before it was detected on Earth, was detected on the sun, and in terms of the spectral lines. Let's discuss what a spectral line is. That's an atom contains, shapes of electrons, which actually get pulled into its nucleus. Get pulled into its nucleus, and those shape. It's sort of like as like they're the same instrument, but they're tuned differently and they produce different notes. And so the colour of those four, the rubidium, cesium, indium, and thallium, that refers to, as you heat it up, you get a predominant colour, a resonant colour. So in general, if you pour energy into an atom, it will go through all these different these different paths and produce a whole lot of different things, and in general produce sort of whitish colour light. Or I suppose sodium produces yellow light, but the I suppose the important thing here is that these have sort of a dominant electron, sort of one electron. So in this group one, there's one electron, and in the indium and thallium, there's one electron again. In the P shell going out, so that dominates going through, so you tend to get one note. So you've got these, if you imagine different pianos and or different multiple tuned instruments, there's these that produce a dominant colour. Now the tune of helium could be seen, so they could see, look, there is a gas up there, helium. It is the gas of the sun. And now helium was discovered I think pretty much last century, and in terms of the periodic table, you have to get this into your head, so to speak. A periodic table is a principle of octaves, they said, you know, eight elements in a row. At the time Mendeleev put it together, there was no known noble gases. So he had a formulation of the periodic table without the noble gases. So the noble gases are helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, and technetium. No, organeson. All the way up on that last seventh period. So you've got seven noble gases. Now, we don't know whether organeson is a gas, so to speak. Xenon is a bit interesting. It's a noble gas, but it's an anesthetic. Go figure. That's pretty interesting. I had a little bottle of xenon gas in a xenon chloride laser. Did a sort of fairly good laser. And the little bottle weighs a ton. It was just sort of pretty amazing. You could definitely feel it from here. I'm just walking past it here. So you've got helium. Then you've got, working up your things, you've got selenium, which is oxygen, sulfur, selenium, tellurium, bismuth. No, plutonium. Oh, it's not polonium going all the way through. Not plutonium, polonium. These are the only oxygen group, and that group is group 6 or 16, depending on how you go through it. Look, they're making a fair amount. Oh, and I am wrong. I wish I understood exactly what they're doing here. It looks absolutely crazy. This is in the station they're rebuilding. I don't know how it's all going in. They must do things. There's someone obviously waiting for their door or whatever. Their son in a train. Stopping here. Yeah, so selenium. Now, I do know that selenium, Australian soils are very poor in selenium. Selenium is used in attacking dandruff, in head and shoulders, and the lack of selenium leads to very weak wool. And so for a while, there's sort of shots or little selenium ingots which you fed particular there's all these people waiting for their kids, I suppose, Friday night, coming home from university and stuff like that. Okay, so selenium. Now, why is selenium? You've got helium. Selenium is the moon. I think, selenium is related to the moon. So you've got the sun and the moon. So selenium is after the moon. I don't know how that's actually gone added there. So sulfur means burning. oxygen means making makes acid, and it's a there's sort of like a crazy periodic table for oxygen. However, selenium is related to the moon tellurium, which is a I think if you eat it, you have tellurium poison. You smell of reek of garlic, so that's one thing. But tellurium is the earth. So you've got the sun, the moon, and the earth. Then you've got around the time the elements were discovered, they were discovering new planets or planetoids or dwarf planets, and you've got the dwarf planet of Ceres, Cerium, which is named, Ceres is named after the goddess of wheat, cereal. So I eat my cereal in the morning, and cerium is used, I think cerium oxide is used for polishing glass, whatever, however that happens, and I definitely use it in optical fibre polishing and stuff like that. And then palladium, which is between rhodium and silver, it's a catalyst, and that's Artepalidus, which is, cerium is like a little dwarf world, formed in the asteroid belt, and basically planet formation was disrupted by Jupiter moving in and moving out. It was how the this is about 4 billion years ago, so 4.5 or 4.8 billion years ago, the Earth planets began to form, and in this process Jupiter moved in and moved down. And one of the things that we see is that basically the sort of these large planets form in the outer solar system, and as they gradually collide, they absorb slow-moving stuff and farm out fast-moving stuff further out. And so you've got planets moving in, sort of destroying the sort of inner rocky planets, and in general we are sort of like more an exceptional solar system in terms of our larger gas giants have stayed out. And so we sort of probably had two gas giants coming in, Saturn and Jupiter, and they came in and sort of Jupiter was pulled out to pull in Saturn, or things like that. There's all that sort of combination of a lot of conversion going on, which sort of spared the Earth to get us across. So that's tellurium, this Palladius. Now, it's palladium, and that was discovered. No, don't know too much about this, but that was a thing. And then the discovery of uranium and Neptune and plutonium, uranium, Neptune and Pluto. Now, obviously, plutonium was discovered after the discovery of Pluto. So Pluto, I think Pluto was discovered in 1922. So it gives you the area. But so therefore, you've got five with colour, five with, seven with colour, and seven with to do with planets and astronomical bodies to go through. Then we have the next thing of ones which are to do with mythical spirits. Now, there's nickel for the and cobalt. These are sprites or demons, which were thought to exist and kill people in the cobalt and nickel mines in the mountains of Germany, the Harz Mountains. So you can imagine the sort of back in the day, the sort of the your mythical Europe type stuff. Miners would come up with this. So there'd be the Romans would be setting up silver and gold mines, and smelting lead and producing a whole waste of lead, which sort of led to a real wacky, aggressive time. I really wonder whether lead poisoning makes you aggressive, because... there's places there. The other one, the other element is strontium. Now, strontium means fairy's nose, which is sort of like a pretty amazing thing, but it's not named after... Oh, no, I'll name this element after strontium, after a fairy's nose. No, the actual village in Scotland, Strontia, was Sir Humphrey Davies, who was sort of like the David Attenborough of physics, the periodic table, named it after the place where the first samples were given, and that's strontium. But strontium itself is from a Scottish legend of a fairy's nose, and it's a lovely village, but there's not much there. It's sort of like a fragment. It's got a playground and a shop, and so it's there. So it's got three. So that's 17 elements, 2 7s and a 3. Then we've got place name, city elements, and the Darmstadtium is the sort of German sort of element factory in the middle of Europe, Darmstadt. Sort of, what the heck is it? It's just elements sitting in the transition elements up there. It's a rare element, who knows what it is. And so that's definitely a place. I was trying to think. There's obviously a lot named after people, but there's Darmstadtium. Dubnium is the also sort of the equivalent Soviet era Soviet atom city, Dubnia. So that's a place there. There's Lutetium, which is named after Paris. It's the ancient Latin name for Paris. Hasnium, the I don't know whether it's a city or a state. Hasnium. I just got to think. There's Pacific cities. I'm sure there's cities which come to mind. I really they're sort of a city place place names. I just really that's four. Four of those, or Strontia, so that's a place name and a place name which happens to be a folklore name. So you've got a bit of an overlap there. Probably you've got regions, magnesium and manganese, after the same, perhaps the same area in Greece, where these were... identify. Done lutetium. That's one which goes there. There's elements which are sort of irritating. If I think place names, there's the four elements named after the same place in Sweden, which today is got a little corner shop and a little island, and it means it's such a boring place that the Swedish named the place called Atta Village. Now, sort of the English equivalent to that is car park, and that's yttrium means yitter, brium means village. Oh, sorry, I should remember another one. It just came to my head. I shouldn't forget that. Yttrium, ytterbium, which is going it. Then terbium and erbium, four attempts to name it after the same bloody place. Now, obviously, there's the place of named after Stockholm, Holmium. So, you know, that's... I'm sure there's more to it. So, let's go. Strontium, Dubnium, Danstratium. That's three. Four after Yttrium. So that's seven plus one. Lutetium. I think that's there. So that's you're getting a something up to 25% of the periodic table. Now, now there's elements named after female scientists, and that's Metrium. This one of the scientists in pre-Nazi Germany in Darmstadt, in that area, and Curium. Then there's so that's two after female scientists. Then you've got elements named after countries, or I suppose continents. And Mauritium, which is you could also say as a place Berkeley, Berkelium. So that's a large number of stuff. That then you've got Americium for America, Francium for France, Gallium for France is twice, Gallium and France gets two goes. There's Germanium after Germany. I can't think of too many. Then you've got U.S. states, Tennessee, Californium. Tennessee, I've done Tennessee, Californium. Is there another one in there? No. There's elements which you would say named after scientists who had absolutely no idea about the periodic table, but we just want to sort of name them. I would not say that Copernican is probably the one person who was way before any idea, wasn't even a twinkle in his eyes. How he got in there, I don't know what the the logic of the. Oh yeah, you've got people to do with X-rays. You've got Rockinium, which is for the Rockon rays. Then the there's Barragium, there's Bor. Oh, Bor. Yeah, you've got a whole heap of element names after people. So, Bissum Curium, Berkeley, Californium. You've got Einstein, Fermi, Mendeleev, Nobelium, Rutherford, Lawrence, D.H., or it's not D.H., Lawrence, Livermore. Now, is Livermore a place? I think Livermore is a laboratory, so that could be another place name. There's no scientists there. See Borium, Borium. Hasnium, is it Hass? Is someone, or Ganison, is named after a person. There's elements which are named after, what you call hard to find. That would be dysprosium is hard to find. Oh, look, sorry. Colour element is praseodymium. Now, dynium means twin. New name is new twin, neodymium. Praseodymium means green twin, it's a green colour. Now, terbium and erbium were once as a clear salt, once got a pink salt, and the elements were mixed up because someone picked up the wrong beaker off the shelf. So you've got those elements. Now you've got obviously copper and gold and silver, which is there. Now, I think there's elements which have an odour. Erysmium, osmium, tellurium, bromine. I think bromine has got a stinky element for scent. To go through there. So a lot of elements have those things. So we're going through a number of the elements. You've got iron. Technetium is an artificial element. Promethium is again an unstable artificial element. So of the 100 and I think bismuth is the last element, so I think 82. There's 80 stable elements in that. I believe I could do it. There's two elements which are missing. Now, there's a number of of course, there's the element which is sort of the standout element, sort of the greatest element, the element whose name I absolutely adore, and that's antinomy. And that's, why is it called antinomy? It's the anti-monk element. So the antinomy used to be toxic, it used to be a colour, the Egyptians used to have antinomy colouring, and antinomy is, it's one of those things that anti-monk. That has to be one of the greatest elements. Now, it's interesting that there's, I think, sodium Na and nitrogen. All that type of stuff came from the same area in Egypt, salts, which had potassium nitrate. Sodium nitrate. That's right, sodium nitrate. And it's of the area. So nitra is an area in Egypt around the Nile, used to flood, leave a few things. Potassium is a corruption of potash. So now, why it's got a little K, I can't quite fully recall. Now you've got the gen elements, which is oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen. So oxygen makes things as acidic. Hydro means makes water, and nitra is something which is made from the salt of nitra. So it makes a genesis. Lithium means rock. Barium means rock. Yeah, heavy stuff like that. So again, lithium means a rock, basically a rock salt. Now, beryllium or carbon, all those go across. Neon means new. Krypton means cryptic. So these are elements which are hard to deal with. It's astatine. Dysprosium means a real pain. Krypton means a bit of a puzzle. So there's sort of that gets there. But xenon means stranger. And now argon. I think argon means, amazingly, means stupid. There you go. That's interesting. Argon's the most sort of the silent gas. Sort of, it's 1% of our atmosphere. So one in every 100 breaths you breathe is of argon. And where does the argon come from? Well, it's the decay of potassium. And there's a few sort of odd elements sitting around the place, everyday elements, which are unstable isotopes, but they're, I think it's tellurium, there's a few examples of where what's happened is that your neutron star or your various supernovas have crushed neutrons in together, and you also have sort of production of elements through slow neutron flux. So neutron flux will then sort of lift you up the periodic table. And if it's slow neutron flux, if they're radioactive, they won't hang around to go to the next step. So you get sort of slow neutron flux, and then fast neutron flux, and then so there's three. Probably there's four. There's slowly dying star, where it sort of burns more and more fuel, it reduces up here. Then you've got slow neutron flux, and then you've got high neutron flux in a supernova, and very high neutron flux in neutron stars. Obviously, two neutron stars colliding, they form something pretty massive. And our neutron star is sub-black hole. It's on its way to being a black hole. And so you basically, it's like you put coins at the top of the periodic table, and they sort of neutrons sort of raise it up, and then time they fall down, and so they get stuck in various areas. So there's some elements which are theoretically unstable. The stability of 30 times the age of the universe, or something like that. But they are technically unstable, or they would decay, but there's a quantum mechanical violation that you can decay. Gee whiz, my knees are a little bit sore. I hope I can do this section okay. So that's your sort of memory associative thing for the periodic table. I hope that's been interesting. Then you've got the sort of overall shape of the periodic table, and essentially there's the periodic table is essentially a giant long periodic table. It's sort of like this is ridiculous. If you wanted to stand the periodic table on, so the way the periodic table at the moment is, let me describe it to you. There's a row of 2 7 across, and then so that's 7, and then there's a row of 14, 2 across, then there's a row of that's the rare earths, and then there's the transition elements, that's 10 by 4, and then the sort of non-metals, which as we call it, the P block, and that's 6 by 6, 36, 40, 14, and 14 by the way that you 14, 28, so it's two rows of 14, 28, that adds up to 118. But if you stack that up, that's 2, then 14, then 10, then 6, and that the 6, it looks like a big person with these huge legs. That's if you turn the periodic table on its side. Now, what's happened is that people have if they've come to bury the periodic table in books, and they've only afterwards, you know, they've got this and they've stuck their feet directly on the torso, and say if you've got the head, this big sort of head there, and that's made our periodic table, and then they've discovered the legs afterwards. It's sort of like a coffin where they cut up the periodic table to fit in the coffin, or they cut up the periodic table to fit in A4, and the periodic table is not an A4 beastie. You know, it doesn't fit in a book. It's a long, long, long beastie, and they've cut it up. The fact that there's always 2, 14, 10, 6, it's the factor of 2 is that you get the factor of 2 because we are living in a universe with a double universe, so spin up, spin down, and so you've got that in there. You've got the 2 electrons, etc., in the S shell, and 6, and there's 6. You've got the 1, 2, 3 symmetry, and then the 1, 2, 3 of the opposite, you know, the opposing spin that you can put in to put it in there. So really, you should have the periodic table longer, you know, the long form. In fact, I have no patience for the short film. I don't think anyone should draw it. I don't think it should be in books. I just think, you know, if I had my way, I'd just absolutely just, you know, I'd go mad. You know, just rip down museum exhibits with it. I just, you know, it's a familiar thing. It's the good old familiar. It's sort of like the periodic tables are like an archaeological dig. And, you know, in the old days, they used to throw in the dog. And, you know, if you weren't trained, you'd think that dog bits are associated with people, you know. They're half dog bits are thrown in. You know, people were short, you know, much shorter. They're shorter than the small grave sites, and no, what we do is we chop it up and go in. Sort of this artificial social thing we've put on the periodic table, and it's, yeah, really doesn't go. Now, the other thing is that the people don't have a feel for the rises and falls, so if it's got an odd... Now, firstly, the periodic table is done in Z numbers. So, firstly, Mendeleev, he really got... We could call him... He didn't get the periodic table. He had the periodic chart. Yeah, I suppose it's more... Look, we've got the periodic chart, and he came up with a table, which eventually we discuss as the chart. Now, if can I say, looking at the periodic table, it's not, you know, let's be quite frank here, it's a chart, not a table. A table has got distinct rows and columns and stuff like that. It's more than a table. It's better called the periodic chart, I would say. So Mendeleev didn't know about the noble gases, left them out. He'd make a few things, but he was a bit of a... He had nothing to lose, basically, by making big things. So you've got the law of octaves and newlands and stuff like that. Then Mendeleev comes along, and it obviously doesn't interface with the law of octaves, because the law of octaves could only really, really work if you had the noble gases. You know, you get 8 electrons, you know, 8... in there. Now, I just want to think and there are 8, so this is no wonder it was a stupid idea and stuff like that. And they often show Mendeleev with a picture of a periodic table which with elements that were not in his time, and in a chart, and all that type of stuff. They see the picture of the two, and of course the kiddies get confused. They see a picture of that and the periodic table behind it. I don't know, it's sort of like Dobby appearing in episode in the first book of the Beatrix Potter, Harry Potter, yeah, Harry Potter and that, whatever it was, and It's, you know, yeah. If you see the pictures enough, you can easily get confused. Now, one of the things I have learned is never to actually talk about Harry Potter, because I know far less than anybody else could possibly know. But to go in the lines, there's that sort of confusion. Now, the thing about the periodic table there is that we've got this long form. It's also, if you could feel it, it would. You could feel the logarithmically speaking, so this is a unit twice as much high, it's actually got 10 times more, a unit three times more, it's got 100, how you quite express it there, but it's got this beautiful corrugation because Z even is more stable than Z odd, and you've got this method. You're sort of pouring neutron-rich elements into this table, and they decay, and they stop where they don't decay, and they tend to be more stable in the positive things, and the less stable ones just don't. Don't hang around. So, let's do it. So, magnesium is more. Magnesium, calcium is more abundant than sodium and potassium. Just go through, or. Carbon, oxygen, and the noble gases are more stable than aluminium, nitrogen, and chlorine. That goes. It's just the way it goes. Now, again, this is due to the way that the nucleus are formed. And if it's got an even number of nucleons, it's got opposing spin. And if it's got opposing spin, the magnetic fields line up in the nucleus. It's just a little bit stronger. Now, it's not. It's more that if there's an odd, there's also a thing that odd. There's a few other things going into the actual structure. Then superimposed on top that are these. Things that if you can see a pattern within a block, so that you've got S block, F block, D block, P block, if you can see a pattern in that, it's repeated across. And so within the P block, there's a pattern of something called electron affinity. This is an atom's ability to take on an extra electron, which is more stable. So the most stable atom is an iron, a negative iron. Let's get that into your head. There is no, there's no atom which hates having an extra electron. There are things which it makes no difference to it. You can have an extra electron, it makes no difference to it, or it likes it. So the most stable atom is Cl minus. Cl minus is more stable than Cl. O minus and O2 minus is more stable than O. It likes to take on an extra electron. That's called electron affinity, which is really the basis of all chemistry. However, for some reason, we don't talk about it. Now, the electron affinity is, if you look on it, you click on it and look on a table of electron affinity, you will see that things that the chlorine has the best electron affinity, a similar position in the periodic in the F block, that bottom block, a similar position in the transition elements, the similar position in the P block has this greatest electron affinity. Yeah, just go across there. You don't have that thing with something called electronegativity, which is sort of an artificial construct which is, I suppose, by Pauli. I don't know how it's gone, but it's one of these things, this ordering of elements, which there seems to be no surprises. It's fairly boring, and people people talk about it. Now, where there's sort of noble gases in the P block, they're very noble. There's also sort of noble gases, equivalent analogs in the transition metals and S blocks and P blocks. So your last row in the S block gives you the noble gases. Your noble gases, it's sort of lack of reactivity, is similar in the let's try and get this right. Your zinc, cadmium, mercury, they're pretty self-sufficient. And similarly, your S block and your P block, so your F block. So the last one is it yttrium? Yeah, I think it's yttrium. It's got that aspect of it. There's a similar sort of property for magnetic properties. So the SP block are too small for the magnetic properties to come out, but around iron and nickel, you've got a similar stuff in the F block. If you look across it, and you can see sort of very much the same pattern. A general pattern is expanded in these blocks. This is to get you to go through it. So that's a general discussion of the periodic table, and that's got me amazingly all the way through Glenbrook and all the way to Glenbrook Creek. And what we're going to do is point the microphone at the creek so you can hear the end of it as I talk about something else on the way back, and then I've got to do the hard yards actually starting to read and to a bit focused on podcasting. I'm sort of halfway through sort of changing gear, having been taught to write scientific papers, sort of trying to work out what are the structures in an educational paper, and actually trying to mend the two so I can be faithful to both. But I'll just pass, as I promised, I'll pass it over for you to listen to the creek. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.